So that's your worst. That's interesting.
Yeah, I feel there's a problem coming in our future. You can't see Hurst's face, everybody, but I can. All right, enough about the worst Hurst, possibly. Let's hear about the first Hurst.
Yeah.
Top 5 Face-Off contains adult themes and language that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
He's Matt Hurst.
He's Matt Squirrel.
And this is Top 5 Face-Off, the official world ranking of everything. What are we ranking today, Hurst?
Well, Squirrel, today we are going to be ranking the top 5 movie villain schemes.
Coming right up after this.
If there's more than one, then there's a best and a worst. If there's more than 5, call Squirrel and Hurst. It's the Top 5 Face-Off. Actual facts. It's the Top 5.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Welcome back to the show, rankers. And for any new rankers, welcome. If this is, in fact, your first time, Squirrel, why don't you tell these lovely new people what we do here and why we do it?
Yeah, hello, excellent new rankers. This is Top 5 Face-Off, the official world ranking of everything. Each episode, we have a random subject chosen for us by our Patreons, and we pick the top 5 and the worst in that subject, and then you, the ranker listening along at home, you go to our website, top5faceoff.co.uk, and vote. Tell us who is correct. One of us is always correct.
But of course, we do not like to get straight to the point because we are British. So what's been going on?
It's been hot, Hurst.
Yeah, it's been well hot.
Proper record-breaking hot. We did a podcast before, it was record-breaking hot, and now it's even more record-breakingly hot.
Which actually does feed into that thing you were saying last week about what if new stuff comes out, do we have to redo our lists potentially, like when we're breaking records? Because
we've already broken that record, I guess. Yeah,
exactly. That information that we offered on that particular podcast is now out of date because it wasn't record breaking. Well, it was at the time, but it's not anymore. And if you listen to it now, we're basically lying.
Well, hang on. No, it was record breaking. It's just no longer the record.
Yeah. So if you listen to it now, it's false information.
Tricky. All right. Well, be sure to check the date on these things, rankers, so you can be aware of when we recorded things. There you are. Solved it, Hurst.
Yeah. And if you do think that we've made a mistake and you haven't checked the date, you know, just send us a message anyway and we can let you know what's going on.
Hello at top5faceoff.co.uk.
Yeah. Good stuff. This is a powerful episode already.
Powerful episode.
We've really found our flow. I'm
fucking thrilled. We've been recording this for 5 minutes. I reckon we're going to be, I don't know, 2.5 minutes in, and 40 seconds of that is fucking theme tune.
Oh, Jesus. Yes, so it has been well hot, record-breakingly so, and just devastatingly, even when you go out of the house at like 9, 10 o'clock at night, it's just like, what's happening?
Still mad hot.
Yeah. And we don't have pools, and most places don't have aircon. It's not like these countries, these developed countries that other people live in with aircon. Anyway, this is boring chat, isn't it? I'll tell you what's been going on that's awesome. I went to see the Masters of the Universe last week.
Oh, right. Was it good?
It was fucking brilliant.
Hooray.
I had such low expectations because obviously the original, the Dolph Lundgren one, was so, so dreadfully awful that I couldn't really see past, even if it was twice as good as that, it'd be half as good as the worst of the Fast and Furious. So it was, I felt, well, I'll go with it. Carly booked it and I said that, and it was just so funny. It had that sort of Marvel sense of humor, but it had its own identity, and they kept like the in-jokes from people who watched He-Man back in the day. Skeletor was brilliantly camp, but also evil. It was
good.
It was just excellently done. All of the characters were just great. And even when we got to the end, I said, oh, I hope they do like an extra bit with the end of the...
Every episode,
there was like a lesson. What did we learn this time? And out of nowhere, spoiler alert, Orko turned up and did a, what did we learn from this one?
Like, fucking brilliant. Oh, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, it was really good. Now, I mean, I'm a happy person and I smile a lot, but I don't laugh very easily. You wouldn't think so being on this, but... because you make me laugh. But yeah, I laugh quite a lot in that film and I highly recommend it. Yeah. So that happened and that was good and that was much more interesting than the weather.
Good.
Yeah.
What excellent chat so far.
Yeah, I feel like this has not been our best work. I'm going to blame the 35 degree heat and say that we are addled.
It's true. Well, let's move on before we have to sit in these really hot rooms any longer.
Yeah, let's just see what happened last time.
All right. Well, we were discussing the absolutely excellent film franchise, The Fast and the Furious, as I'm sure you remember.
Mm.
He loved it, everyone. He loved it. He told me as soon as we went off air that they're his favorite things, but he was just trying to be cool. Anyway, Hurst, we got some comments from last time.
I did actually write up all my notes, though, for any Patreons who haven't seen the news. All of my write-ups are now on the Patreon site.
Yes, if you want to read just some hate, that's where to go.
Some hate-fueled excellence.
Indeed.
And I feel they adequately summed up my feelings and the plot. That's a little bit of bonus something for
there is readers. You go right to the end. But anyway, who do you think got in there first with the first comment, Hurst?
And Meg98.
Meg98 says, Tokyo Drift is my favourite. So sad you didn't talk about the car in space. True, we didn't even mention the car in space, did we? I'm not sure.
No, because it didn't make my it wasn't bad it enough to be fast and list. Too Fast, Too Furious, but it also was so shit that it didn't.
Oh, make that was top like five. Sick for me. It was so good. Fucking loved it. Boosting in space.
Amazing. I did actually send a screenshot of that car in space, the squirrel with the words, and Jesus wept. So we did acknowledge that privately. Sorry, we should have acknowledged it more publicly.
I mean, besides making it the literal cover of the podcast episode you clearly haven't listened to.
Yeah.
Because you wrote, and Jesus wept, and I replied, with joy.
Yeah.
But it's true.
We were really at the opposite end of that.
We very much were. Anyway, that was over for you, Hurst.
Ah, lovely.
I have equal disdain for the F and F series, which I think is a clothing line from Sainsbury's, is it not? I feel for Hurst this week. He gets my sympathy vote. Cheers, Cough. Now, rank and number ones, Cough. We specifically said, don't vote for us. Vote for the things we say. Trooper, voting for Hurst, purely because it will be funny if he wins this week. Thanks, Troops. Now, look, again, you seem to be missing the point.
Yeah.
Let's see if someone can do it right. Ah, Money Slinger. Appreciate the effort Hurst put in for a series he clearly hated. There you go.
That was a lot of effort and a lot of hate.
But ultimately, Hobbs and Shaw deserve the top spot. Also, I know it doesn't count, but man, does the second film suck. Spot on, guys. That's from Money Slinger. Thanks, Money Slinger. You voted for me.
Good? Oh, no, boo. But no, still, well done.
You've done it right.
You did do it right.
Did do it right.
But also, if other people hate it and didn't watch them all, they just have to go on what we said and maybe what I said resonated more.
And another vote for me from Ohio. He just simply says, family. Yeah, family. Brilliant. And that's all the comments. That's not many comments that time.
Gosh.
Who do you think the winner is? You've got 3 comments. I've got 2.
I mean, I'd love to care more, but me, maybe, because of the hate.
First, I have 23. You have 25.
Yes. That's excellent.
There you are. So, the official top 5 Fast and Furious films, please.
Oh, crap. Okay.
From 5 to 3, who cares? Because they're all exactly the same. At number 2, Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. And at number 1, the best of a bad bunch was The Fast and the Furious / Point Break.
Yay, it is official. There we are. So now you don't ever have to think about them again until Fast 11 comes out early next year and you rush to the cinema.
I don't need to think about that either. I know what happens already.
Well, speaking of knowing what happens, Hurst, should we rate some evil villain schemes?
Let's do that.
First, I hold upon my hand the Queen of Destiny. Anyway, I'm going to flip it and see which of us goes first.
Let's do it.
How will I know?
Wow, that's easy. Squirrels have tails. Heads first.
Up it goes. It's heads for her.
Ah, normality has been restored. Now, this one's been an interesting one because obviously you've seen a lot of films out there, and unlike Fast and Furious, there wasn't a finite number that you had to watch to know. It's just, you have a little look out there, see what people are saying, try and remember what things you've liked. But there are a lot of things that make a good villain scheme, but I've narrowed it down to 5 core elements so I could then narrow the field and focus on what makes each scheme special.
Oh, damn.
And I have, for each of my schemes, scored in, not an out of 10, in an old school A to F, the 5 fields, which are ambition, ingenuity, commitment, execution, and impact.
God damn.
Well, I needed a way to try and split up. I did struggle a bit. But banging straight in at number 5, I have got a really controversial one. Just because, yeah, you got it. It could just as easily have been my worst because it's just such convoluted nonsense. But in this particular instance, that's what it was meant to be. And it was just hilariously ridiculous. So my number 5 is Ray Finkel from Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, 1994. The scheme is...
Okay, good, because I'm struggling to remember.
Ray Finkel was once the kicker for the Miami Dolphins. Mm. In the final seconds of the Super Bowl, Dan Marino placed the ball with the laces facing the wrong direction.
Laces in, right?
Right.
Bad.
Finkel missed the field goal, the Dolphins lost, and his career effectively imploded. Over the following 10 years, he constructed an entirely new identity as the ball-busting Lois Einhorn, joined law enforcement, and rose up to lieutenant, or as the Americans like to say, lieutenant, of the Miami Police Department so he, as Lois, could cover his future crimes of kidnapping the Dolphins' mascot dolphin, Snowflake, which is only a distraction so he can abduct the quarterback Dan Marino so he can't play in the Super Bowl and the Dolphins lose.
Yes. That's right.
He also murders a guy along the way because he was close to discovering the truth about the kidnapped dolphin, which is more of a malfeasance, but, you know, might as well crank it up to murder.
Mm.
And the whole thing was because he missed a field goal.
And it wasn't even really his fault.
It's just so excellently petty and unnecessarily complicated and, yeah, made me laugh. It's a very original scheme. There's been a lot of bad guy schemes out there over the years. A lot of them are based on various themes of money, power, vengeance or whatever. And this one hits the vengeance note, but really for very petty reasons. So anyway, my scorings were ambition, D-, really, because it wasn't a brilliantly evil plan. It was just D-. Ingenuity, A+, absolutely A+. Commitment, A+, all the way. 10 years of planning just to try and ruin a Super Bowl for someone. And then execution, B, because actually for the vast part did well. And then impact, F, because who cares?
Nothing happened, right? Yeah.
Yeah, nothing happened. And even if it had been a riotous success, only Dolphins fans would have cared.
Yes. And becoming lieutenant within 10 years of joining the... That's really good going. Like. Yeah. Should have just stuck with that career.
That's a pretty decent career rise. Maybe let go of your past and just be Lois Einhorn. Number 5, Ray Finkel.
Alrighty. So for my number 5, I have Jigsaw from the original Saw movie.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have any grading systems, Hurst. You've been quite scientific about this, and I've just gone, oh, yeah, that one was quite good. And then put them in the right order.
Lick your finger, pop it in the air. Which way's the wind blowing? Yeah.
Right, yeah. And then you choose like 10, and some of them end up on the list and some of them don't. But anyway, John Kramer was his name. Sounds a bit like John Craven, doesn't it, off News Round?
Oh, yeah. That's niche.
He was known as Jigsaw, and he makes these games where you will probably die. But if you don't die, you rethink your life choices. Yeah, that's it. That's all he does. He just wants people to be better versions of themselves. He is a project manager, and he makes all these contraptions and plans, and he does his research, and if people survive it, they tend to come out of it better. Like, maybe, like, yeah, they have PTSD now, but they're not as selfish as they were. So that's good, right? Number 5, Jigsaw.
Good trade-off.
Right.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
My number 4 is a classic villain, Lex Luthor. From Superman, the 1978 movie.
Okay.
The scheme. Lex's scheme is complex, but based on simple economics. Land is valuable. beachfront land is really valuable. Therefore, if you could somehow create thousands of miles of new coastline, you could become unimaginably rich. So he purchases vast amounts of cheap desert real estate in the American Southwest before stealing two nuclear missiles. He then plans to detonate one along the San Andreas Fault, triggering a catastrophic chain reaction that will cause California to break away and sink beneath the Pacific Ocean. With California gone, Lex's worthless desert suddenly becomes the new west coast of America. It's actually a brilliant screen. And why is it brilliant? Well, beneath the comic book madness, the logic is surprisingly coherent. Every step leads naturally to the next. Buy cheap land, create demand, profit. So, yeah, it's creative, it's audacious. The beauty of the plan is rooted in a genuine economic principle. Lex understands that scarcity creates value. He simply decides to manufacture scarcity by deleting California. It's good stuff. Unfortunately, he gets right in his own way. So after doing all the hard work of acquiring the nukes, kryptonite, both of which are extremely difficult to obtain,
yes,
he manages to trick Superman into coming to his secret lair, opening the safe full of kryptonite and effectively being made completely impotent. Absolute. To have achieved that was amazing. All he has to do is kill the now totally neutralized Superman and complete the plan. But like a prized turd, Lex struts off and leaves him slowly dying and entirely rescuable by the easily influenced Miss Tessmacher, who promptly rescues him. Superman recovers and thwarts Lex. What a plum. So ambition, B. It's good stuff. Ingenuity, A+. Commitment, B+, because he did a lot of good work along the way before, you know, shooting himself in the foot. Execution, C-, because he did so well, but just schoolboy Bond villain error. And then impact, B+, if it had succeeded, it would have been world-changing. He would have become the richest man in the world. He would have been known all over the world. I mean, people might have been annoyed with him, though. He might have gone to prison. But anyway, or he might have become president. You never know over there.
Well, same old.
So, yeah, it was so close. But good stuff from Lex. That's good supervillain stuff there. So number four is Lex Luthor.
All right, there we go. But he's not worrying about the fact that he is, you know, radiation poisoned his shiny new land, or at least a bit near it.
I mean, details.
Right. just scrub that up, right? We'll figure it out. This was in the 70s. Maybe, you know, they didn't know about that stuff.
Yeah, maybe the nukes were cleaner back then.
All right, my number four is a bit niche-est.
Oh, I like niche.
Is the rich people in Stark, which was a movie based on a book by Ben Owen. It was also a miniseries. It was a miniseries, and then they took some bits out and stuffed it all together, and it became a movie. But anyway, Stark was based on Ben Owen's debut novel out in 1989. Basically, what happens is the rich people, who, of course, have been lying about how bad their stuff is for the environment to make sure they can make as much money as possible, they realize that the Earth's going to fucking die. There's nothing they can do about it. So what they decide they're going to do, they're going to disappear into space on Star Arcs, or Starks, right? You get it. Mm. And leave everybody else to just fucking deal with the problems. But what? They couldn't actually afford it, which made them very angry because they're a bunch of very rich people, like 30 or 40 richest people. So what they do is they engineer a stock market crash by selling off all their shares really, really cheap, and everything collapses, and on paper they become really poor, but they're still now there compared to everyone else, fucking super rich, and they can build their Star Arcs and disappear into space. Fuckers! Fucking rich people, man. Fuck up the planet. And then just like, oh no, we broke it. Okay, off we go. Have fun. Pause. Man, I hate them. And they fuck, well, spoiler from something that came out in 89, and they fucking got away with it. Damn.
I actually really respect that in bad guy schemes, when they get away with it.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to stop them. They're fucking billionaires, right? And this is what, hang on, let's do some quick maths. What is that? 37 years ago, this was written. Fuck it, it could have been last week, couldn't it?
Didn't you watch this in the news about that trillionaire twat?
Yeah, right? I mean, how is this? Well, let's hope it's not happening now. But yeah, private lifeboat. Fuckers. Hate them. Good work, Ben Owen.
I mean, it's sort of right in process, isn't it? It's like, no, the climate thing is a hoax, say all the billionaires who want to make more billions from their climate ruining shit.
Yeah, and make everybody else poor in the process. Just even poorer. Fuck you. Oh my God, I hate them. I hate rich people like that. These imaginary rich people that don't exist. They made me so angry. So there we are. Number four, the rich people. Ben Owen Stark.
Excellent.
There you are. Read it. Good. If you
haven't read it. I do that.
Go read it.
My number three is Biff Tannen from Back to the Future Part 2.
Which one? There's like
Back
several.
Back to the Future Part 2. Like, just
there's Biff several.
Yeah.
Okay.
All, I mean, they're all involved. It's like, but it's the same guy, just at different ages.
But or different timelines, right?
Different timelines and different ages. Right. Anyway, I mean, mostly old Biff. Like, if we're going to
get into
the specifics, right. Old Biff is
not rapey Biff. All right,
not rapey Biff. No, old Biff from Back to the Future 2. The scheme. When elderly Biff, that's nice of him, when elderly Biff discovers a sports almanac containing the results of every major sporting event for the next 50 years, he immediately recognizes the opportunity. Using Doc Brown's time machine, which he intuitively knows how to use and fuel, he travels back to 1955 and gives the almanac to his younger self. That's it. Absolutely simple. Young Biff then spends decades betting on events he already knows the outcome of, accumulating enormous wealth and influence until, effectively, he owns Hill Valley. Now, the genius is the simplicity and the purity of the execution. He sees an opportunity and he just goes for it. No planning, no risk assessment, no second guessing. He grabs the almanac, gets in the car, and for probably half an hour's work and zero time lost, he's a millionaire. The most impressive part is he wins completely. Absolutely. When Marty arrives in the alternate 1985, Biff's empire is already built. The casinos exist. The money exists. The influence exists. The plan worked exactly as intended. The heroes actually have to travel through time after the fact to undo what he's already accomplished, which is cheating. More on that later. Ambition, B.
Yeah.
Ingenuity, B. Commitment, A+. Just pure execution.
Being able to work out how the fucking DeLorean worked. Do you see how many buttons are in that thing?
Yeah.
How in God's name? You'd have never figured it out.
It just initially, oh God, no. I could have got the doors on. I could have switched it on. Turned that engine on. I could have driven it. I just, yeah.
Hey, it was a pretty normal car at that. For that bit, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
At that point, it had Mr. Fusion as well, didn't it? So it's like knowing to put like banana peels in there. Hopefully that was already
charged, right?
Anyway, so yeah, commitment A+, execution A-. He should have trashed the car when he got back to the future. That's the only bit he didn't do right. If he trashed the car, perfect. Impact C+, it's no supervillain scheme, but it was formulated and executed extraordinary efficiency, and I admire that. So yeah, number three. Elderly Biff from Back to the Future 2.
Good job, Elderly Biff. Now, going by Back to the Future time travel mechanics, did Elderly Biff ever benefit from that? Or did other Biff in the different timeline benefit from that? Or did he go forward to the elderly time? I'm not sure how it works with Back to the Future.
It's difficult to think on it too much because it does fall apart pretty rapidly. Technically, right. From the moment he gave that to Biff, when he went forward in time, it should have gone back to his new timeline.
The new timeline.
Which means he would have never gone back to the time where Marty and Doc were because that was a different timeline.
Yes,
and they would have never seen the car again. So
the
whole franchise does fall down there. But we're going to skate over that because the important bit is not that they ended up winning in the end by going back in time, that actually Biff saw an opportunity and just immediately executed on it. That's entrepreneurial spirit that would get you somewhere. And it did.
He didn't just drive the car. He flew the fucking car. I've just remembered. Oh my God.
Yeah. But then cars did fly.
Cars did fly. Maybe they were very standard.
That wasn't new to him.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
There we are. Solid choice. Yeah. And he got the girl, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
She may not have been pleased about that, but...
No, that was a really rapey Biff in full flow, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was, Marley's mom. Although not, I guess. But anyway, weird. Cool, let's not think about time travel anymore. My head will break. My number three is Simon Gruber from Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah, no, fair play. That was something that I read a lot about.
Yes. Now, you could argue it's not so much a scheme as a plan. I don't know what the actual difference between a scheme and a plan is, but his plan was so fucking good. Like, it was spot on. He had everyone thinking he was just out for revenge for Han. And that was once they'd found out who he was. They didn't have a clue before that. But no, he was doing a really good bank robbery. No one even fucking realized until McClane lucked in at the end, like properly lucked in. There was no skill involved. And it was just, oh, he so nearly got away with so much money. And he looked like he was just being a terrorist and blowing shit up for the sake of it. And even some of the people working for him thought that was what was going on. But no, the inner circle knew that what he really wanted to do was shut down all the subway trains because of the bombs and drill through the hole in the bank to steal all the gold. Because banks are full of gold, I guess, in America. Ohio, let us know.
Yeah. All those vaults you've been in America, they all got gold in?
Yeah, probably, right? I mean, and they had a lot of gold. And, yeah, the plan was just so meticulous. and so well thought out. And he was way more successful than Hans was for like 99% of the film. And Hans definitely had more style, I think. If Simon had had just the class that Hans Gruber had from the first one, this would probably have been higher up.
Are you calling him Hans Gruber?
Hans.
I'm just missing the S.
Oh, right. Sorry, it's Hans Gruber. Yes, he would have been higher on the list. But as it was, you know, he wasn't, he was very well acted. That's not taking anything away from Jeremy Irons and his German accent, but he just wasn't quite as cool. But he was so clever.
Yeah, it was bad.
And his riddles designed to put people off what he was actually doing were excellent. The film was originally going to be called, apparently Simon Says, that's what the script was called. It had nothing to do with Die Hard. And then it became a Lethal Weapon sequel. And that's why they brought in the two people working together. And then it became Die Hard, and they had to bring in Samuel L. Jackson to take the place of the other Lethal Weapon person. But there we are. Yeah. Number three. Just an excellent, meticulous, well thought out plan. Simon Gruber, Die Hard 3.
Yeah. No, good call. There were a lot of contenders for this one. It did require some narrowing, hence my scoring schemes and me obviously forgetting a whole bunch of stuff as well. And now I have a suspicion that we've never agreed on number one, and we're not there yet. I just
apart from the two tests we've agreed on the number one, sure.
Yeah, but yeah, not when it was only when it was obvious.
Well, that's true. That's true. It has been obvious from the start.
Whereas this one is a bit more, yeah, subjective.
We're not. It's not a chance.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think. You never know.
My number two is John Doe from the film Seven.
Oh yeah.
So John Doe, played by Kevin Spacey.
Boo.
Don't worry about that. We're looking at the villain scheme. We're not looking at the...
Even the film could be shit. It wouldn't matter if the scheme was good.
Yeah, exactly. So John Doe is the bad guy, and his scheme, he spent years constructing a serial killer masterpiece so that a detective would murder him on cue. So he believes society's become morally bankrupt, so he chooses seven victims, each representing one of the seven deadly sins. So the one he killed, gluttony, forced to eat until his stomach ruptured. I mean, it's a really gross film, but really intense, a real thriller.
Uh-huh.
Greed, a lawyer forced to cut off his own pound of flesh. Sloth, kept alive and bound to a bed for a year in extreme conditions. Ghastly business. Lust, a man forced to kill a sex worker. Also in a horribly grisly way. Pride, a model whose face was mutilated and was left with the option of death or living disfigured. Chose death. Envy, John Doe himself, who murdered Detective Mills' wife because he envied the detective's life. And finally, Wrath, Detective Mills, who gave in to his anger and executed John Doe, completing the plan. Again, spoilers, but we are talking like 95 or something.
Yeah.
So, you know. Catch up. The murders are effectively grisly art installations, but with immense detail and clues that ultimately lead the detectives themselves to become part of the final piece. And why the plan works, the brilliance of John Doe's scheme is that he is not trying to escape capture. In fact, capture is essential to the design. He needs Somerset and Mills to follow the trail exactly as he's laid it out. And by the end, he's turned himself into the final piece of his own masterpiece. The investigation, the victims, the detectives' reactions all become part of the same carefully engineered conclusion. I mean, it's really clever writing, but it's also, it's a horrible thing to watch, but it's mesmerizing. Really, really good. And he's a strong candidate for most elaborate, certainly. And the murders are planned months, maybe years in advance. Every victim is selected very deliberately. And he's manipulating the investigation right from the start. It's so good. And the ending only works because he understands Mills and exactly how he'll react. Great stuff. It's one of the rare villain plans where the villain achieves exactly what he set out to do.
Everything goes perfectly.
I'm calling Biff's, like, he did it. He did his bit. Then they cheated to get past it. But no comebacks on this one at all. He set out exactly what he set out to do, achieved, executes his plan, and the victims, perfectly. And he wins. No one saw it coming. Everyone was blown away by it. Ambition, A. Ingenuity, A+. Commitment, A+.
That he was doing it for years.
Execution, again, A+. Impact, C+. I mean, it's great, but it is small scale in terms of global impact and, you know, how much it would make the news in other places. But the scheme itself is brilliant. That doesn't take away from it. It's my number two. Excellent stuff, John Doe from Seven.
Excellent. Solid choice. Yeah, he absolutely nailed what he was going for. Like, no leeway of that. It was spot on to the letter, right?
Didn't have to deviate the plan at any point. Just planned it, executed it. Just so excellently done.
What in the box? There you go. It's my plan, motherfucker. Cool. My number two is Ozymandias from Watchmen.
Ah, yeah.
So Watchmen was a movie which was based on a comic, and the comic is brilliant if you haven't read that. Sorry, it's a graphic novel. It's not a comic. It's one. Brilliant. Absolutely superb. And it's about superheroes and vigilante fighters, and what would they be like if they were more realistic, like psychologically fucking damaged and just basically doing what they like some of the times because no one can stop them. Ozymandias was the smartest man in the world. He was also an excellent acrobat for reasons. This was based around a slightly alternate universe where the space race didn't really take off. And hey, and
we're on top of things today.
Cold War was looming, right, between Russia and the US. And Ozymandias didn't want this to happen because A, he wanted people to live through the decade, and B, he was very rich and he thought that he would be poor if that happened. But it was generally more about the people. He was doing it for kind of good reasons. And what he did is, in the movie at least, he engineered it so one of the superheroes, it looked like, attacked New York. And the destruction was so much that Russia were like, Christ, you need any help and shit like that. And then Russia and America just high-fiving, hugging, possibly like they are in real life, sorry. In the comics, he magicked up a psychic alien beast, which had the exact same effect. It destroyed New York and la 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 la. The best thing about it, which I like, which is just the moment when you're reading it, or if you hadn't read it, when you watched it and found this out, was two of the heroes had gone to his hideout. They knew what he was going to do, so they've gone together to stop him. They reckon together they could probably do it. And they get there, and he monologues his scheme at them. They're like, we're not going to fucking let you get away with this, buddy. And he goes, what are you talking about? I did it half an hour ago. And it was just like, oh, shit! And it's like, smartest villain ever, because he tells them the plan after he's done the plan, and there's nothing they could do about it. And he's fucking done it. New York is destroyed. The nuclear war / Cold War is over. He wins. Ozymandias. Brilliant. Nailed it.
Fine work, Ozymandias.
All right. So that's it, right? We're on to the worst first.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. Right.
Cool. Who have you got?
Sorry, I didn't put as much time into this one because, again, there were a few contenders, but mine was Mr. Freeze from Batman and Robin. The scheme was freeze the entire Earth.
Yes.
Now, the problem is everyone dies,
including
the people you're trying to save, including your wife, which is Mr. Freeze's whole thing. Oh, my wife. Everyone's dead. Like, what have you gained? So, yeah, and you know what? It's just lazy because he's Mr. Freeze is like, what am I good at? A cold? Well, I'll just freeze the Earth. That's going to be my plan.
So, yep. Because my name is Freeze.
It's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age.
So, yeah, and in terms of, I suppose ambition is quite highly scored.
That's pretty fucking
ingenuity,
ambitious.
E-. Commitment didn't really get anywhere. Execution, rubbish, impact. Like, I mean, it would have been impactful, but it was just bollocks. Fuck you, Mr. Freeze.
Yeah. I've got niche again, Hurst. I had Thanos from phase one of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, just the entire fucking thing. Fuck is he doing? What are you doing, Thanos? You stupid giant idiot. He's a fucking hulking great titanic. No, he's literally a titan, so I can't say titanic. He's enormous. He's fucking super hard, super smart, super fast. He's got all these magical crystal stones on his glove that let him do anything he wants. And what he wants to do, because he think overpopulation destroyed his planet where he came from, called Titan, he is going to get rid of every other person, every other living thing across the entire universe. That's his plan. That's it. Because then there's more resources. Well, just double the fucking resources, you pleb, right? Then no one dies. Excellent. Also, if there's double the resources, any living things kind of grow rapidly to fill up the amount of resources they have. People who are smarter than me reckon that Thanos' solution would have lasted about 9 years and then we'd have been right back where we were. And he's done all of this. And he did do a lot. He went through a lot of shit to get himself in the position where he could, and half of all the people vanished. But no, why did he, why? What the fuck? Just bring your planet back with your magic. A fucking just absurd. Piss off.
Oh, I see.
There we are.
All right. Wow.
He has the power of a god. And he was like, oh, there's too many people in the pub. I'm going to get rid of some of them and half of them are gone.
Oh, okay. So that's your worst. That's interesting.
Yeah, I feel there's a problem coming in our future. You can't see Hurst's face, everybody, but I can. All right, enough about the worst Hurst, possibly. Let's hear about the first Hurst.
Yeah. Okay, so my number one is Thanos from Avengers Infinity War.
This is the second time this has happened.
The scheme, Thanos believes life inevitably consumes more resources than are available. Having witnessed the collapse of his own world, Titan, he becomes convinced that the only way to save the universe is to reduce its population. And of course, yeah, no, all the nerds on Earth have gone, no, because, you know, they have a truly broad view of the whole universe, unlike Thanos, who is Titan and actually does have a view of the whole universe and can see what's going to work for it. Anyway, that's fine. He's convinced the only way is to reduce the population. So he travels the galaxy collecting the 6 Infinity Stones, which is mega. Mm. Like, to be able to do that, no one else could do that. Only Thanos is like, yeah, fair play. Unite them in the Infinity Gauntlet, which he had specially made, and wipe out half of all life in existence with a single snap of his fingers. Not one half of the planet, one half of all the life. Making space for regrowth and people to, you know, develop in new and interesting ways. Mine's brilliant. Most movie villains want something for themselves. They want money, power, revenge, immortality. He has all the power in the world, and his plan isn't conquering the universe, it's saving it. So that immediately elevates the scheme, because every sacrifice he makes is in service of what he sees as the greater good. So as a project, it's remarkably elegant. Identify the problem, acquire the tools, execute the solution, retire. Good stuff. And that's what he does. And for all the things you just said, I entirely disagree. I think you could double the amount of resources, but where are you going to put them all?
Doesn't matter. He can do that.
People still won't have access. Like, what, you just have to remake the whole thing. Then everyone's different anyway.
He can do that.
Yeah. But then, how's that any better? Then if everyone has to be completely different, like completely new set of people, you're like, start again. It's kind of what he did.
But why did he do it? Makes no sense. It's such a bad plan. Thanos.
Because there are like 200 billion galaxies, and in each one of those, or 200 million galaxies, each one of those 200 million stars, and around each one of those, probably a stack of planets. Like, of all the planets, like all of the trillions and trillions of planets, I've not got time to go and organize all of them. It's just like wipe them all out, let them start again. Well, not all of them. He didn't wipe them all out. It's like, right, half of everything's gone. It was dispassionate. It wasn't malicious. It wasn't, right, all the rich people are all the twats, all the people I don't like. Not like a genocide, not a focused kind of, this is a people I hate. This is, half of everything's just gone. Rebuild.
Well, there we are.
I think it's a remarkably elegant plan. I think the fact that they went back in time and cheated and undid it. I was like, no. I know better than that god in the sky. It's
That's because they killed their mates.
Yeah.
Having that. And they kill Groot.
Yeah, so they can't look at it dispassionately about what's actually best for the universe. They're looking about it. It's like, no, we want to save Earth and like some of our other planets we like.
And Groot.
So, yeah. Anyway, ambition, A+. Like, that is a big fucking plan. Ingenuity, B+. He knew what he needed, and he had the tools, but he did have to get around a lot of places to get the stone, so it requires some ingenuity. But
true. Ingenious, but wrong.
Commitment, A+. Like, he went full way, nailed it. Execution, A+, because he did it. He succeeded. And impact, massive A+. Is there anything better than A+? A++?
S.
eBay? Just spectacular work. And because of all of that, just the whole way down, I gave him B+, because I don't like to see straight A's anywhere. But,
right, okay.
Yeah, just heroic villainy. Great scheme.
All right. There we are. Well,
so that thing where I thought we might have the same one, that kind of went a different direction.
We kind of had the same one, just in different places.
Okay, let's see.
Ultimately different places. Well, mine is also from the MCU, Hurst, but I have chosen Baron Zemo from the MCU. Now, this may not be a name that you immediately pick up, but Baron Zemo was in Captain America Civil War. He was the little, I think he was Hungarian dude who... Sorry, of course he wasn't Hungarian. He was Sokovian. Of course he was. That's very important, because in Age of Ultron, his family got killed by the Avengers, not on purpose, but just as Ultron was smashing shit up and they were smashing shit up, Zemo's family died. And he decided he was going to fuck up the Avengers. And he was just a dude. He was a psychiatrist, right? He was a doctor. He wasn't somebody that could fire lasers out of their eyes or some shit. So he's got no chance of beating any of the Avengers up. So what he does is he just makes them hate themselves. He frames the Winter Soldier for the UN bombing and uses the Winter Soldier programming and ultimately revealing that it was Bucky, the Winter Soldier, who killed Tony Stark's parents. Not only this, Captain America knew about that. And obviously when Iron Man found out, he was very, very cross and they had a big fight, which was an excellent big fight. All of this is just completely pure and, like, from his point of view, there's no violence he committed. And it actually works, much like the previous plans we've been hearing about. It works fine. They get into a big fight and beat each other up and the Avengers are basically over from that point. And there are so many people in the Civil War, it might as well have been called Avengers 2.5 or something, because they're all fucking in it apart from 4, because they had to get rid of 4 and Hulk, otherwise they would have just come down and go, no, stop it, and crack some heads about. But anyway, ignore that. He is a rare MCU villain because his plan is small scale, it's personal to him, but strategically it was massive. He doesn't want to conquer the Earth. He doesn't want to kill one in every two people across the entire universe. He just understands that family groups, which the Avengers were, fall apart when you kind of take away the trust they have between each other, especially with egos as big as some of them in the Avengers. His superpower is reading the fucking room, basically, and he did it superbly and nearly brought about the end of all the Avengers. And I believe, if I'm remembering rightly, he pretty much did until Thanos showed up and started swinging his big sword about. So, really? Is it a sword? Do you call it a sword if it's got two ends? What's that? You do weapons.
I don't know. Ask Darth Maul. He knows what they're called. It's like a staff, but a double sword. A sword staff. A helicopter sword. It was clever, but yeah, no, we're miles apart again. I guess that's
always very fun, different. Isn't it? Yeah, it is.
Of course, he didn't want to destroy all of half of all life because he's a tiny little human with no view of the universe as a whole, and he's one of those people who might just be suddenly not there anymore.
Well, that's true. Or he's a doctor with a base understanding of how these things work, and
Understanding of how the whole universe works, like all doctors do.
Well, apparently the whole universe works in exactly the same way because there are resources and we use them up.
Yeah, based on our view from a tiny little planet.
That was Thanos' whole plan.
All right. Your little doctor's guy.
Oh, no. It's Zemo. Would you like a fact and an estimated fact about Baron Zemo?
Oh, fuck, yeah. I better do some quick typing in a second, haven't I?
Fact. In the comics, he was called Helmet Nemo. But they changed the name because of Finding Nemo and Finding Dory, the incredibly popular films. Or fact, in the comics, he was incredibly flamboyant and had a purple mask and kind of pranced about. Very different to the down-to-earth dude he was in the movies.
Oh, yeah, I do like the idea of that. Like, even if I'm wrong, I'm going for that because flamboyant purple mask, that does sound very comic book, graphic novel friendly.
Oh, no, they were comic books. For the Avengers. Well, you're right. Anyway, for some whatever reason, he wore a purple mask and he kind of pranced. Yes, Nemo. He was always called Helmet Zemo in the comics.
Would you like to hear some facts, an estimated fact about Infinity War?
Oh, yes, I would.
Fact. The Wakandan war cry, Yabambe, is Jose for hold strong. Fact. The security for filming of Avengers Infinity War at Durham Cathedral was so tight that not even the cathedral wardens were allowed access inside.
Pretty sure the battle cry means Wakanda forever. So we'll go with the second one.
You are correct. The security for the filming of Avengers Infinity War at Durham Cathedral was so tight that not even the cathedral wardens were allowed access inside.
Seems unfair.
I know.
It's their house. All right, cool. But we are done, right? It's time to
That's it for the ranking. And now we're just on to the sign-off of the show and the last bits. We need to find out what we're going to be doing next
week. Doing next week. Well, there's only one way of doing that. Huh? That means we have to spin the wheel of decision.
I'll spin that mother.
All right, here we go. Nothing new on the wheel from last time, Hurst. Although that said, we got some gaps. Some people owe us things, so... Well, there's certainly still plenty on the wheel, it's got to be said. Yeah. But if we have covered your topic, you can put another thing on the wheel if you're still a Patreon, so let us know. But enough of that rubbish, shall I give it a press?
You give it a go, let's see what happens.
We and it's going to be, oh shit, oh no, oh God, Hurst.
Meatloaf songs. Oh, that's better than ABBA, I suppose. Meatloaf's all right. I mean, all his songs are like 12 minutes long, though, aren't they?
Ah, good. Well, certainly a few of them are. Meatloaf songs comes from Kovac, one of our number ones. Thanks,
thank
you very much, Kovac. We will cover that. And while we're talking about number ones, I'll tell you what, I bet Meatloaf has done a fucking lot of songs. So, standard rules, only albums, no B-sides or anything like that. How many albums has Meatloaf made? 12.
Unfortunately, I've got a drive down south tomorrow, so that's going to fill some hours, isn't it?
That certainly is. And I'll tell you right now, you don't have to worry about the last three or the first one. So that'll cut it down somewhere.
Okay.
Bat out of hell free and then stop.
Okay.
Real dead ringer for love.
So we need to, obviously, big shout out for our number ones.
Yes, indeed.
And in what voice am I doing it this week?
Well, going right back to the start of this podcast, I think it's time to bust out some Skeletor. Obviously cartoon Skeletor, not whatever he sounded like in the movie. Did he sound right in the movie?
He was played by Jared Leto.
Yeah, I know.
And he did it brilliantly. It was so he did it with an English accent. It was a weird one, actually, because a lot of the English actors were doing American accents and American actors trying to do English ones, but his was pretty good. It was great. He was an excellent Skeletor because he was intimidating and frightening, but also really camp and a bit, they want to take the piss out of him, but they're scared of him. So, no, very good. So, original Skeletor. I can only think of what I think he sounds like.
Well, I was just
what's going to happen right now. We can do what I think he sounds
like. And if my maths is correct, this is Ohio's last turn as well. So,
well, you know, it's a good one to go out on.
Mm.
So, our number ones. Give Paz, you're number one. Goddess Yasmin, you're also number one. Guys, chap. You're number one. Kovac, you're number one. In Ohio, you're number one. On a temporary visa.
True. And Hurst, Moneyslinger is now number one as well.
Moneyslinger, you're number one. Moneyslinger, welcome to the ranks.
He's slinging that money like I believe we told him to do three or four months ago now.
It went from being all talk to now being all action.
There we go. So there we are. Yes, thank you very much. Our number ones, they are our very favourite patrons, although we love all our patrons and we love all our rankers.
Yeah.
We just love you more if you pay us.
Definitely.
Quite simple, really. Other than that, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time if you want to find us before that.
Yeah.
We are hello at top5faceoff.co.uk. We are on Facebook. We are on Blue Sky. We are on YouTube. We are on fucking everything. If you search for Top 5 Face Off, you will find us. But what if the thing you're looking for is some art? Where can you get some art?
You should definitely contact Hurst about that because he does do art. And he talks about himself in the third person whilst he's talking about art.
Weird.
Isn't that weird?
A bit weird.
Yeah. Go to doghouseart.co.uk or go and find me on Instagram on @dog.house.art and have a look at what I do. If you've got your own ideas of something you want to do or you want me to do, then let me know. I'm working on a commission still at the minute, but I was also thinking I might start doing a James Bond series afterwards because that might be quite a good fun. I could do James Bond villains, and maybe some James Bond cars. I'm not settled on anything out, but that's where I think I might head on the next one. So, yeah, that's where you can get your art.
Excellent.
Before we sign off, though, I think, do you remember why Ohio became
he named our number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's important that we just remind the rankers and the Patreons and the number ones that's why Ohio's managed to get a temporary visa as the number ones, because it was him that came up with the name. Well done, Ohio.
He also made you watch all the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah, I know, but I try not to hold a grudge, especially with the number ones.
Unlike Thanos, motherfucker.
Yeah, again, I don't feel like it was a grudge. It was just a solution to a problem that needed solving.
Right. Well, there we are. We're back. 2 weeks time. It's fucking hot. First night, I'm getting out of here. Not that we're in the same place, but we are both in equally hot places, I suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Please. rewind this podcast for the next person that comes along, and we will be back in 2 weeks' time for the top five Meatloaf songs.
All right. See you later, then, Rankers. Love you.
Top 5 Face-Off is presented by Matt Hurst and Matt Squirrel and produced by Powerstorm Awesome Fire Incorporated. For more details and to vote for a winner, visit top5faceoff.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
Thanos could have just created infinite Gregs and solved the problem. Yeah, hello, excellent new rankers. This is Top 5 Face-Off, the official world ranking of everything. Each week, each episode, we get it. No, fucking hell. Each episode, we have a random subject chosen by us. Fucking hell, Hurst. It's a whole...
It's all right. Once we've done it a few times, you'll get used to it.
Yeah, that's true. Hello, Rankers. Squirrel here. That's it. There's no more outtakes. We were... That's one. Fuck. But otherwise, yeah, that's it. We were either somewhat professional this time round, or the stuff I didn't put in is because it was just so fucking boring. See you in a couple. Top 5 Face-Off.